There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
Thank you to our subscribers and members of our listening audience.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Faub, my co-host. Nasser Hamid will be bringing us Motorsports Mondial in the second part of the show. This is podcast number 327, February 5th, 2009. Steven?
This F1 Weekly podcast brought to you by the all-new 2009 Motorsport Memories, powered by Turbo Calendar, a pictorial tribute to the age and rage of the Turbo era. Incredible images in a large format featuring the Brabham of Nelson Piquet, the Siegfriedo Tuttlemann Turbo of Ayrton Senna, and the Porsche-powered McLaren of Niki Lauda, and many more. Available on our merchandise page. Get one. You know you want to.
Thank you, Stephen. And of course, we always thank Motorsports Memories. On today's program, US F1, hoax or for real? Bruno Senna says no to GP2 return. Heidfeld needs to out-qualify Kubica first. And of course, Motorsports Mondial with Nasser Hamid. And of course, we've got some quality interviews courtesy of Mr. Hamid, and that would be Frédéric Vigier of Motors TV, and a bonus interview with Franck Montagny. Stephen, welcome to the studio. How are you today?
Great. How about yourself, Mr. Rogers?
Absolutely wonderful. The weather is starting to change and the rain clouds are showing up, but I rode my bike to the studio anyway for health and vitality. But anyway, let's go right to the top.
Oh, darn, in there I thought you were going green.
I am green. Greenless, actually. Due to the economic crisis, of course. Anyway, let's go right to the top of the story. When I saw this in the morning, US F1, very interesting. Peter Windsor Anderson, who's been in the business for years, and an American F1 team. I checked it out. The domain was registered in the year 2000. So this has been talked about behind the scenes, obviously, for quite a while. What was your impact when you saw it?
It would be great. It would be nice to get a US F1 team that gives it, basically gives America a little more leverage to get a race back here in the States.
Ha!
The problem I can see is with sponsorship drying up like nobody's business, getting an F1 team that's basically kind of a generic team, which basically means another independent, is going to be tough to get enough money together to, you know. Were they planning on maybe trying to acquire the Honda franchise?
No, not at all. This is going to be based in beautiful downtown Charlotte, North Carolina.
Yeah, but you've got to have a franchise to race in F1.
Yeah,
which franchise are they going to use?
They've got Bernie Ecclestone's blessing. He could probably pick up...
Yeah, Bernie's blessing means... That means they need an extra $10 million just to get in the door.
He could probably pick up David Richards' franchise because he's not going into Formula One for quite some time. And don't forget, there was one more franchise left that never went up for grabs, and I believe it was for an American team. And I find it interesting because you've really got some talent here. Ken Anderson was technical director of Ligier in 1988. He also worked for Onyx F1 team before moving back to America. He was technical director for Chip Ganassi Racing and AJ Foyt Racing. I mean, this guy's been around, having been involved with the Indy 500, lots of machismo, and of course, on the other side, and it's funny, every website they kept calling our friend from Speed TV, Mr. Windsor, a Brit, when in fact he's from Australia. But Peter Windsor, his knowledge, obviously being around Formula One for years and years, having managed Williams, I think the whole thing could really be for real, and I'm excited about it.
Would be nice. Do they have a time frame as to when they hope to get in? Or
I have no idea, but I'm sure NASCAR is going to have some tidbits for us in Motorsports Mondial.
Should be fun. I would love to see it. You know, it'd be a chance to get U.S. drivers involved. You know, if they can put together a decent car, then, you know, hey, maybe we even see some wins or some points.
Not only that, but they're talking about bringing American drivers, which is exciting. And, of course, that would force the hand of Bernie Ecclestone to bring back some kind of North American Grand Prix.
Yeah. I mean, at the very least. Someplace in North America.
Absolutely. I think it's ridiculous. But I even like the logo. US F1. I went to the website, and that's all it is. It's a big, big logo.
US F1.
Yeah, blue and red. But I thought it was well done. I'm pretty excited. Nasser has just walked into the door, and I'm sure he's excited, as everybody, about an American Formula One team because, you know, he's got the history on Americans involved in Formula One. Nass, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Very good, sir. Thank you. How is everybody?
Everybody's pretty fine. How's the tea?
Tea is very good. I am ready for a refill.
Really? You've been hanging around the back all this time?
Absolutely. Oh. In the green room.
Well, that's where we keep the stars.
Green room with the green tea.
Exactly. Keep up the good work. Your thoughts on USF1 when you first heard about this, when it broke?
Well, this was a surprise, but, you know, in this day, you know, nothing surprises me. But I'm thinking, okay, in this financial meltdown, who's going to come up with $30, $40 million? And, of course, there is the Honda team, which is available for £1, which will be about $1.60, so why not buy that? But, you know, the thing is, where there is a will and wealth, and both of them are in abundance in the United States still, these things can happen.
Absolutely. I mean, there's still people out there that love motorsports, involved in motorsports, have the money, but they're not excited about putting it into anything right now.
Yeah. My thing about Formula One not making it big in America is that, you know, I blame, I know for a fact that I would say maybe a million or two very serious Formula One fans. And I say this because of 100,000, at least Americans showed up at the first U.S. Grand Prix. And nobody's going to show up to Indianapolis if they were not really interested. You know, Formula One is not something you just go there because there's a there's a game going on. I'll take Joey Jr. with me. So I blame it on people who want to treat this as a business and make a few bucks and then, you know, hoo-hoo-ha-ha to their golf courses. But we need serious people, the Andretti's, the Penske's, and other people who have serious passion, you know. I mean, Long Beach Grand Prix was a big success because of the people that were involved. Chris Polk, Dan Gurney, Phil Hill, and other, you know, serious people. So hopefully this is true. There is a big question mark about, you know, why set up a team here when Honda is available, but they have a big, you know, this windmill in Charlotte, North Carolina, which I understand Ken Edison is part owner of. So they have, and the motorsport industry is huge in Charlotte. And, you know, racing engines are racing engine, and when you have a big pool of talent, you can draw some very good people. So it can happen, and I hope it does.
Yeah, I think there's a good possibility, and when your name is USF1, I think you're going to have to be based in America, especially if you want to attract American sponsorship and American dollars, which is really, I think, the heart of this, even though I know it's a global industry, and, you know, who would say no to ING if they were interested, or Red Bull?
Yeah, I mean, what are you going to tell Peter Windsor? We don't need your services because you don't have a green card.
Well, so, you know, the other thing, too, is that by having it stateside, you have the ability to draw on the engineering talent that's available on this side of the ocean that you probably can't get if you're based in England. Because there's so much engineering talent in the United States to draw upon to improve a vehicle or to, you know, to get techie that you wouldn't have access to necessarily if you basically bought a Honda and stayed in England.
Yeah. Not only that, but the access to engines, which the FIA is making easier now, and there's still that will to bring America into the fold of Formula One because it's such a huge interest here in motorsports.
And, you know, all you have to do is look at the Ford effort at Le Mans. You know, that's what it takes. You know, they brought in Chevrolet drivers and whatever, and people from Holman Moody were working the pit crew at Le Mans. So you have to bring the very best people. And in this day and age, you know, you cannot say, you know, the last thing we need is to bring in people to make statements. Oh, we're going to have Danica Patrick and Marco Andretti. you know, come on. I mean, there are drivers in this country who are very good, who just need a little chance and a little opportunity, who can run with the very best. I mean, case in point is Jonathan Summerton. Okay, he won a race in the F3 Euro Series at Hockenheim. He has raced there, and there are some other good talent here. They would need some help and some opportunities. John Edwards, I think, is a pretty good young American driver. Alexander Rossi just won the Formula BMW World Final. So talent is there, again, because of NASCAR being so big, everybody goes there. But if there's a, like, you know, the recent package, recently package was announced for Formula Atlantic, and this guy, Ben Johnston, some rich guy, has bought the series. Now they're offering $1 million prize in cash. Champ Car was offering $2 million, which was like a voucher to take it to a IndyCar team, a Champ Car team, I should say. But the new Atlantic bonus, $1 million, is you can take, it's a check, you can take it anywhere. And not one of those check with a lot of zeros is a one also there.
Oh, yeah, we never get those here.
Yeah. And so that I was looking at it this way. I said, okay, if a kid wins this race in America from any nationality and he gets $1 million, probably you'll have to share 50-50 with the team. $500,000 is enough to do a series, a season of Formula 2, and would be almost enough to do a season of Formula 3 in England or Germany. So this is what we need.
Would definitely give you enough money to get your foot in the door with most of the teams in Europe up to just below GP2 probably.
Yeah.
So in other words, everybody's fairly confident here at the round table that this is going to happen and we will have
a well, US I'm not confident. I don't know if it will happen. It should happen, and I'll be very happy if it does.
Okay, so I'm sure we'll get some more news.
I mean, I tell you, if you go back to any certain images or LAT or Cahier or GrandPrixFoto.com and you punch in Mark Donohue or UOP Shadow, there's a very nice picture I saw in one of the magazines. One, it was of Mark Donohue just before the start of the race. You know, in the old days, they had big air boxes. And when you see those in the 70s, you see that American flag on that.
Yeah.
And it makes a big statement.
Mm-hmm.
And we need that.
I agree. It would be exciting. And not only that, but the manufacturers, Mercedes, Toyota, they want American involvement because this is their biggest market. BMW mm-hmm. sells more BMWs here than anywhere else in the world.
Yeah, same for everyone.
Ferrari sells more Ferraris in the States than anywhere
exactly,
else.
Without America, Ferrari's in the tubes.
Most companies, I mean, Porsche wouldn't be in business if it wasn't for the U.S. market. But anyway, I was thinking, talking about market here, I was thinking how cute it would be for Mercedes-Benz to have this is just a marketing idea to bring Lewis Hamilton here and Pussycat Doll Nicole Scherzinger and have them do a cross-country media tour in a Mercedes convertible where they can make stops in, you know, Chicago, have a hot dog with Larry Carta, go to major markets.
It would
markets.
Have to be sponsored by Oscar Mayer or something.
Yeah, but the Mercedes should look like a Mercedes, not a Wienermobile.
Not a big piece of... Yeah.
But they can follow the Wienermobile.
Yeah, exactly.
No, that's a great idea. I love that. One of my favorite TV shows is some Gwyneth Paltrow and some chefs, and they're cruising across España, and they're all driving Mercedes, and it's very, very exciting.
No love for Gordon Ramsay?
No. But that's a cuisine show, so that's a little off...
What about Jimmy Dean's hot dogs?
Jimmy Dean's hot dogs are acceptable.
How about let's get back to some racing news?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Real quickly now that we've spoken about USF1, I think it's going to happen. And they're supposed to be on the grid in Melbourne in 2010. We'll see what happens. And you guys will owe me dinner if it doesn't. Okay.
I'll buy you dinner if it does.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Red Bull comes out Monday. The new Red Bull. By Adrian Newey, the 2009, and apparently Mark Webber, who's probably seen a few secret captions, pictures of the new Red Bull, says this car is going to be the most beautiful car on the grid and the most outstanding.
It's going to look like every other car on the grid. The rules won't allow it to be anything else unless they get really a really cool paint job or something.
I don't know.
Outside of that, I don't know how it's going to be any more beautiful than, you know, the Renault or the Ferrari.
He's quoted as saying, "Our car will look different to the majority of the others that have been presented so far." Now, what I find interesting is all the cars are going to look totally different from what we've seen so far. from diffusers to exhaust to noses. And Renault's already come out and saying they've got a completely new nose for the car. And I'm almost thinking that some of these companies, and it's a smart thing to do, is some of the parts are decoys.
Yeah, well, no, that or they're, you know, their first generation stuff that really doesn't have...
It's filler.
Exactly.
Because it's still in the engineering stages. They just want to meet that date. But
you got to have a complete car to put it on the track.
Exactly.
So you're not too worried about, you know, making sure that all the aerodynamics of that nose are tuned down to the finest. You just want a nose to put on the front of the car and let it go at that. You know, part of the reason that Fernando's probably been less than happy with the Renault is because it's not where it's going to be when they take the grid in Melbourne.
Well, and they're hoping that Adrian Newey has taken the step that's going to bring them the championship, in Marco's mind. Nass?
Excuse me, did I hear Fernando less than happy?
Huh? What? Fernando was where?
Less than happy? Did I hear Mr. Fab say that?
What is this happening now? He wasn't happy with the car when they were testing earlier in the year.
Yeah, but Fernando was a pretty happy guy in the end.
He's making a big check. He doesn't really care.
He's a wonderful guy.
No, he did, but we don't know if he actually said it. It was the Spanish press, you know. Maybe they asked him about the car. He said, no, it's fine. And, you know, they took that as, you know, him being sarcastic.
By the end of this year, you'll see Fernando and Ron Dennis hugging. It's another dinner.
In San Francisco?
I don't take it to that level, Nasser.
I'm just asking, you know. It's a good...
It's sophisticated.
No, this is sophisticated. What's number one tourist spot in the world.
I love San Francisco.
Next news story.
Okay. We've banned testing, in-season testing, and of course...
The ban will be banned
because the problem is that they're banning testing when they're introducing such new technology. It's gonna cause some problems, and the last thing we need is six, you know, out of 10 cars not finishing the race or what have you because they haven't tested enough.
Well, you remember the first race some years ago when it was a Jaguar or Ford or whatever they were called? Both cars started overheating because they were using some different type of paint, and paint started melting as the cars were on. Both of them were smoking. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, so you're right. We don't need this. We don't want testing during a Formula One race.
Exactly. And, you know, I mean, I know we want cost cutting, and of course, Max has added again, the FIA. They want to cut. We're going to such standard specs in a few years that I really believe that some of the big manufacturers don't want to be a part of it. Because it doesn't differentiate from one car to the next.
You know, they have to react to the economy and what's going on. And if they do whatever they are saying, obviously it will be done if the economy stays as bad as it is. And let's hope it's not. But when things improve and rock and roll times return...
And the parties come back and everything?
Yeah, the parties come back and those zero checks are flying out the window, then they'll go back to, you know.
Yeah, especially... You know, Max talks about cutting, and then he tries to go green with KERS, which has probably cost half a season's worth of development money just to come up with something to put in the cars. You can't really have it both ways, Max.
Well, that's my problem. Is it's almost like they have two people running the show, making some of these decisions. One guy's over here cutting, and this other guy's over here saying, well, we need all this new technology, but these people aren't talking to each other. You can't have new technology without testing. It's not going to work.
Exactly. It's not going to work.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I read a news item the other day that in China, over 20 million people lost their jobs, which is
absolutely
very bad. But you can imagine how much, you know, everybody's hurting around the world. And I'd like to see how long Malaysia, China, and Korea and India would continue to fork out $40, $50 million just to enhance their image.
Well, I know that China's already balking at renewing their contract price that they're currently paying. Yeah. We know that Malaysia's been kind of iffy about making, you know, renewing their contract because they can't get anybody to come out to the track. So,
no, and this thing is really global. As some people know, I sell stuff on the internet for vintage cars and what have you. And I was talking to a gentleman in Finland who had purchased something from me. And I had mentioned blah, blah, and he told me, oh, yes, over here people are getting laid off.
Yeah,
it's bad everywhere. It's unbelievable but true. But anyway, we're going to take a quick break. We got Motorsports Mondial with some cheerful stuff. And, of course, we've got the two interviews with Frédéric Vigier of Motors TV and the bonus interview with Frank Montagny. So we'll be back after this brief message.
Hi, I'm Clark Rogers, host of F1Weekly.com's podcast. Please visit our website, F1Weekly.com, your fresh new destination for all your Formula One needs. F1Weekly.com brings you a weekly podcast that covers the latest news, rumors, and insightful commentary related to the pinnacle of modern motorsports, Formula One. You can find us on iTunes and other popular podcast locations. F1Weekly.com. Thank you.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial, and of course, the man himself, Mr. Nasser Hamid. Nass, welcome back to the studio. I hope your supper in the F1Weekly.com cafeteria was delightful.
All is good so far, sir. Thank you. Greetings and racing regards. Good news for all. And I'm very excited about this good news. We are in February, and this is the last month before we have La Saison Premiere in the park in Melbourne. Are you excited, sir?
Yeah, but it's the last. I mean, it's March 29th. Nass.
That's okay. That's
so
okay.
So we still have a bit of a stretch.
We are in March, we can
50
say
50 days at least.
I don't want to hear that. All I know is next month is Formula One, and then we just count the days.
Okay, Nass. So next month is Formula One, and of course everybody gets a bonus check here.
Thank
when
you.
The season starts.
And you probably know recently it was announced both the Australian and Malaysian Grand Prix races will start at 5 p.m. local time.
Yes, they moved them up for the European folk.
Yeah, and that is 2 a.m. for people on the left side of the United States and 5 p.m. for people in New York.
When you say the left side, you mean politically or no. Geographically?
No, we don't do political jokes here.
Okay.
Cartographically.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let me get my relief maps out.
Sounds like he had spent some time at the U.S. Geological Survey.
Yeah, right over here in Menlo Park, I believe. Keep up the good work, Nasser. But you know what? What's really tough for me is I can't figure out whether to stay up late or wake up early. When it's on at 2, what do?
Tape it.
Not me. I have to have it live because
the first race, you have to have it live,
all of them.
Steven.
I have to have races live. Yes. I don't care. Even though they may tell the truth about I really don't have a life, but that's another story in another broadcast.
That is the life.
Yeah, that is the life. Thank you very much, Nasser.
Yeah. In other headlines, winning ways continue for Sebastian Loeb in the world of rallying. Almost full house in the new Formula 2 championship. And like you said, we have an interview with Mr. Frederick Vijay of Motors TV, which will be followed by a chat with Frank Montani. And both of these interviews took place at the Autosport show last month.
Outstanding, I'm sure.
And they say money makes the world go round, so we shall start with Money Matters. Two major F1 sponsors may short-circuit their involvement. Dutch company Philips and Japanese Matsushita, you can call it Matsushita, electric company makers of Panasonic products. Philips is providing clean shave to Nico and Kazuki, plus lots of money to Sir Frank Williams and his team, who has already lost Petrobras and Lenovo. Recently, Bernie approved early payments of TV money owed to Williams to ensure their survival, so things are tough everywhere. Norelco products sold in the United States is also part of the Philips Group, and this company has a history going further back than GE. It's a very old established company operating worldwide. They also have pretty big semiconductor division here in the U.S.
My Christmas lights are Philips.
Oh, wow.
I use a Philips shaver myself.
Very good. Panasonic is on the Toyota team and is also a major player in consumer products worldwide. Their previous brands also include National and Quasar. You remember Quasar?
I remember Quasar televisions.
Yeah, exactly.
Quasar. They had that goofy-looking logo.
Had a cool logo, yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't cool.
It was a grandson of the company, Hiro Matsushita, who raced in Indy cars and started the Swift racing car company in Southern California. We hope both stay plugged into motor racing for a long time because we don't want to lose sponsors or racing teams.
Well, Panasonic would hurt Toyota a great deal because they're basically their their name sponsor.
Yeah, but Toyota is a very, very cash-rich company. But, you know, even if you have $10 billion, you don't want to lose a $500 bonus.
But most of the radios that go into Toyotas are Panasonic's, so.
Yeah. Okay, Rally Ireland. Sebastian Loeb led a Citroën 1-2 over Denny Sordo with Mikko Hirvonen third for Ford. Winner of Monte Carlo Rally, not part of WRC, Sebastian Ogier was sixth in his Citroën. Any comment on the Rally Ireland?
Yes, I do. It was very exciting. And this, you know, the big bummer about 2009 is we know that now we're on a condensed calendar and a rotation system that they recently introduced. And the asphalt rallies of Monte Carlo, Germany, and Corsica have been dropped. So this was one of the few tarmac rallies. And, of course, Sebastian Loeb is el hombre muy macho de tarmac. And, of course, they had to get this win in the pocket because some of the weaker rallies that he might not do as well in are coming up, including Norway, which is next.
Good. Mercedes makes a decision, and so does Mitsubishi. Star of Stuttgart will continue to shine at Woking. Company's 13-year association with McLaren will continue. Mercedes is the largest shareholder in the House of Hamilton. You know, recently there was a news item picked up by every website that there was a vote by the board of directors.
And then
3-2.
No vote. And
yeah, and the Mercedes people said, no, there was no
vote. The Daimler people said, no, there's no stinking vote. We're fully, you know, we didn't. In other words, they're insinuating that we don't need to vote for this because McLaren has our full support.
Yeah. And Mercedes, apart from F1, they are also supporting drivers such as Gary Paffert and Paul Di Resta in DTM. And Mercedes, just for the record, first Grand Prix win came courtesy of Juan Manuel Fangio in the 1954 French Grand Prix at Reims, also known as Reims. And when I say first Grand Prix win, of course, a Formula One Grand Prix.
Of course.
They were very big.
Post-1950.
Si, senor. Diamonds in the rough. Mitsubishi, on the other hand, has decided to pull out of Dakar Rally and all other cross-country rallies. The Japanese manufacturer, part of Mitsubishi Heavy Industries, was victorious in Dakar Rally 12 times, including 7 in a row from 2001 to 2007.
And I'm not surprised.
Were they already out of WRC?
Yeah. Was out for a while. But people have to remember that in Japan, the way the manufacturers are structured, they don't do a lot of layoffs like we do.
Yeah.
Where they just go, you know, we cut 30,000 jobs, hasta la vista. They try to keep those jobs and cut some of the excesses that are out there, like racing and other activities.
Yeah. Attrition take care of the losses and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to lose people in the racing industry, yeah. But a lot of that is farmed out to vendors and what have you.
Yeah. Monza moping. Rome was not built in a day, nor was Monza and the history of the track, which is my all-time favorite track.
We know.
And I'm hoping, planning, saving, whatever I can do, I would like to be at Monza again this year.
You know, I want to be at Monza again this year.
I love that place.
I want my own suite.
Good for you. Good for you.
Call Bernie.
Yeah.
He owes you one.
Monza Mayor Marco Mariani is not happy that Rome is trying to steal the Grand Prix from his park. He has support from Luca, who lives on the second floor and smashes TV, saying Rome Grand Prix is unthinkable. And this is the same guy, i.e. Luca Montezemolo, who said of Singapore Grand Prix, and I quote, "The spectacle was provided by the safety car."
Exactly.
End of quote.
But let's not forget that Bernie Eccleston has sent Tilk to Rome, and Tilk is in Rome right now, this very minute. And apparently, I've seen that they have a $50 million budget and working towards 2011. You know, Bernie.
Problem is, isn't $50 million the entry fee now for
exactly.
Bernie?
It's like that's just for the beer.
They got nothing left to put the other track with.
But Tilk is in Rome, and I don't, you know, and I hate to say this, but this is how Bernie works. He starts doing this because he wants Monza to stay, but they have to spend more money. And he wants more money from Monza, and they're going to have to do some upgrades.
Yeah, exactly. They're going to have to upgrade, and
exactly.
They're going to have to pay more for their fee.
It's blackmail at its finest. And
it's
don't like it at all.
Yeah.
They did this to Spa.
Bernie the
extortionist. It's going to continue.
You know, Peter Brazier drove me to the Donington Museum, and the road there where they want to have a Grand Prix, unbelievable. It's just a small road. There are no other access road, and the area is such you cannot even. It's like Pacheco Pass here in California. You cannot even add another two lanes. So I don't know what these people are trying to do. They want to bus 80,000 people from miles away to the track, like they used to do at Laguna Seca, which I really.
They'd almost be better off just building a rail line if they're going to try to do that. 80,000 people on buses, that's a lot of buses.
Yeah. And it's the same road. These, you know, what if a bus breaks down or there's a problem? I mean, it's bad. You know, just leave it at Silverstone. You know, I was watching a race the other day, maybe a few years back at Manicourt. Yeah, it's not Spa, it's not Suzuka, but it's still a very nice track.
It's very nice.
You know? Yeah, but the whole reason I went to Donington was because Bernie wanted to poke the BRDC in the eye.
And that's the problem. Bernie is always playing these games
with
these racetracks. And in the end, now France, as you will mention in your following segue.
Yeah, and another couple of late signings that I saw today, Karun Chandok, who's from India, we all know.
Very interesting.
Yeah, he has signed. He was with iSport team, Paul Jackson's iSport team, which won the championship with Timo Glock in GP2. He has left this team. Apparently, they could not agree on rupee situation, dinero. So he's now going to drive for Ocean Racing Technology, which is the new name of this team that was purchased by Thiago Monteiro. So Karun will be in the backyard of Dr. Miguel.
Excellent.
Yeah. And, you know, here is, I want to hear your take on this. I read this news today that a 19-year-old American, Jake Rosenzweig, has signed up with Trevor Carlin's team, to compete in F3 Euro Series. Have you ever heard of Jake Rosenzweig?
No, I've never heard of him.
Yeah, I have never heard of him.
But if this is true, good for him.
No, it is true, and he is from the East Coast. He has done very well in karting, won the Canadian Championship also. But, you know, then he was in Formula Renault. I did not see much, like, victories or top five finishes. So I wish him all the best. I hope
he could have some good sponsorship.
Yeah, I hope he can pull out a Kimi Raikkonen, 23 races, and boom, I'm in Formula One. But it looks like too big of a jump. Not saying because of talents, because of experience. Because I've seen quite a few Americans do these things, jump to a bigger series, and then, you know, too much pressure.
Too much pressure.
Yeah. Okay, French Grand Prix continues to be in flip-flop with both politicians and Ecclestone. And I hope, this is just my personal hope, not endorsed by F1 Weekly, that one day Formula One Team Association, this new, you know, the love fest that's going on between McLaren and Ferrari, that they demand in their Concord agreement that traditional races are retained on the calendar. I'm not talking about just races, but tracks. British Grand Prix at Silverstone, French at Manicourt, and the Italian at Monza. Because, you know, teams and drivers make the show, not Bernie and, Max Mosley. I appreciate their contribution and what they do, but I mean, somebody needs to knock some sense in their heads.
And trust me, the French taxpayer isn't going to pick this up. The French will tell Bernie to stick it, and the Parliament. I mean, being somewhat socialist, I don't see any of these people wanting to build new track over in Flins or out in the outskirts of Paris.
I mean, you look at it, motor racing, and I'm not saying this because I'm sitting here, but let's just take a look at it. Indy 500 started in 1911. Gordon Bennett races, 1920s, 30s, Nuvolari, Caracciola, they came and raced here. Okay. Formula One race in 1959, Sebring. Indy 500 used to be part of the Formula One thing. All that history, Phil Hill, Dan Gurney, Mario Andretti, there is so much history here. This country does not have a race, but there's a race in Kuala Lumpur. I mean, you know, how do you explain this to a racing fan?
It's bewildering and bizarre.
And then Korea. I mean, South Korea. And I have nothing against these places, but I mean, come
Abu Dhabi.
Yeah, there you go. Bahrain.
You know, I can understand.
You know, I was talking.
One moving at one regional race. You bring one into Bahrain.
Exactly.
That services a region. But to start putting two and three there, there's no one there to go to the race. The population density is nowhere large enough to deal
with. Tony George decided next year that, you know what? Let's expand it. Let's take the Indy 500
to the to Daytona,
to Kuala Lumpur.
Yeah.
What?
I mean, this is very, very ridiculous. You know, it's beyond ridiculous.
I agree. It's beyond ridiculous. But
well,
there's nothing
not
do.
Like moving the French Grand Prix to Abu Dhabi.
Well,
you know, I was talking to Johnny Herbert, who won the Speed Car Series last year. He was at Laguna Seca a few months ago. And he says, you know, motorsport is really not a sport that locals are interested in. But, and that was no trade secret, you know. I mean, I'm from that part of the world, and a lot of it has to do with economics also. Well, not in Abu Dhabi and Bahrain. But, I mean, just to take these races there, I mean, have you seen the new facility they are building in Abu Dhabi?
Yeah.
That is just beyond, unbelievable.
It's beyond.
It's, yeah, beyond, exactly.
Which is ridiculous. Because I don't really want racetracks like that.
No, I want a spa.
I want Suzuka. Francorchamps.
I want Suzuka. Exactly.
Well, the reason you end up with a track like that in some place like that is because there are no geographical features. You kind of have to build them.
I understand, but it also leans on being too Disney-esque for me.
Turning this into a freak show, you know.
It's a big theme park.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
Okay, back to the Motorsports Mondial.
Absolutely, sir.
Formula 2 with cars built by Williams and series promoted by ex-Grand Prix driver Jonathan Palmer. The series is off to a good start in terms of driver participation, and 20 drivers are already confirmed as per the series website. And I think they're going to have maximum 24 cars with a turbo Audi engine. Two second-generation drivers are also in this series, Jolyon Palmer, son of Jonathan Palmer, the series promoter, and Alex Brundle, son of Martin Brundle. There are drivers from Canada, Russia, Lithuania, India, and still no word yet on U.S. participation. So I hope some young American kid gets into the series, and, you know, of course, the name of the game is winning. But I'm really looking forward to this series. How about you, sir?
I can't wait. It's going to be very exciting. The budgets are reasonable, and Williams makes a wonderful car. I think it's going to be fun. There's going to be some good talent. And at this level, you get some really good, fun racing to watch.
Yeah,
the next problem is where are we going to watch it?
It's going to be in Abu Dhabi. And
well, you will hear my plea with Mr. Vijay about bringing Motors TV to the U.S. in his interview.
Exactly.
And, okay, GP2, you mentioned about Bruno Senna.
I did, and I didn't want to talk about it at the beginning because I knew you were going to bring it up in Motorsports Mondial.
Yeah,
and this is very interesting.
Yeah, he's saying no mas to GP2 as he is still hoping to find a seat in Formula 1. Slim chance now at Toro Rosso as your man, Sébastien Bourdais, is rumored to be all but signed. I hope that happens, you know. And if there is no burning down the house in Brackley, Bruno may still have a seat with Fry and company.
I think it's a mistake. I think he should have gone back to GP2 and won that championship. Get that under his belt.
That would be his third year.
Okay, I know. But
all the more reason to go back and win it, you know, and prove that he can do it.
Pantano's hung out for a long time. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's a tough call, and I feel sorry for him because Honda pretty much bailed on him.
Pulled the rug out from under him.
Yeah, because really he was Bruno. Bruno was going to be Rubinho's replacement.
Yeah, I have a very strong feeling that would have gone through.
That would have gone through. I believe that. And now, I mean, we don't know what's going to happen. And still, we're in February now. No word from Ross Brawn or anybody else over there.
Yeah.
So, a big bummer for Bruno. And I'd hate to see him have to settle and come to the States and do, you know, your favorite.
NASCAR?
Or Indy, even.
Okay, now we need silence. This is something very serious.
Okay, this is serious.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and now we come to our Ripley's Believe It or Not segment, brought to you in part by Perrier, and you may need some after you hear this. And when I read this, I said, wow. Last month, Ron Dennis announced he was stepping down as team principal at McLaren, and this is one of many, many tributes paid to him. The E.F. Hutton of Oviedo, Señor Fernando Alonso, has spoken, and I listened to what he said, and I quote, "There are not many people like Ron anymore. Ron is a throwback to the old days. One guy developing the team and growing up with them, turning them into success, winning championships. So I wish him all the best for his new life." End of quote. Wow. Spoken how many months later?
Yeah,
dude, 18 months later. He's not holding a grudge like some people I know.
And you know, he's thinking in the back of his mind, why couldn't he have done that 2 years ago?
Hey, Fernando is being a regular dude.
No, and it's good that he said that.
Of course it is. Yeah. Fernando's a world champion twice.
Yeah.
Thank you.
De nada. Okay, you know, I would like to thank you. Remember last week I was here, you brought some old magazines for me to look at.
I did.
And you said they are keepers.
They are keepers.
Okay, thank you. So I'm going through them and I'm really enjoying. I love reading old magazines. And what I really like, you know, is if I read today's Autosport, I go through the results, you know, of the smaller races, Formula Ford 1600 in England or Formula BMW, and look at, you know, some names. And then 5 years down the road, some of them are really big. Some have retired. Some are in America. Some are announcers or whatever. And that's what happens when you read a magazine from 10 years ago. You know, you're reading about who the world champion was, who the big players were, and then you read about them. It's interesting. So I'm reading this, and this was a little segment about Damon Hill, our Damon.
That's right. I gave you a book, one of the magazines. He became world champion.
Yeah. And I was surprised to find out, you know, he's into guitar playing and all
that
kind
of
stuff.
Yeah, I know he plays the guitar. He's done a little orchestra.
And, you know, Damon Hill knows he was no Senna or Schumacher, but I have a lot of respect for him. You know, before he became a Grand Prix driver, one of his day jobs included a bike messenger. So if I ever talk to him, I'm going to ask him were there any missed deliveries where the secretary got a wee bit pissed off at him. So it'll be an interesting thing to find out.
Or if I got a wee bit amorous.
Ooh, that can happen. So anyway, his favorite singers are Elvis Presley and Otis Redding. Good choice in music. But Otis Redding, when I read that, I said, well, I wonder if he's sitting on the dock of the bay in Dover, wishing he was in.
Viva Las Vegas! Viva Las Vegas! Viva Las Vegas! Viva, viva Las Vegas!
With that, the curtain comes down on the show at the F1 Weekly Flamingo, and Moa is now leaving the building. Thank you.
Keep up the good work, Nass, and thanks again for another outstanding Motorsports Mondial. We'll be back in 60 seconds.
This F1 Weekly podcast is brought to you by the Holiday Inn Select Indianapolis Airport. This Holiday Inn Select is a full-service, atrium-style hotel and conference center. While a guest there, make use of the free, high-speed internet access, indoor pool and fitness center, or enjoy the good life at the Chanteclair restaurant with its award-winning French cuisine and strolling violinist, or race over to the spot of F1 Weekly's Listener Appreciation Friday social event, Benchwarmer Sports Bar. Catch all the race action on multiple TVs while enjoying the food and daily drink specials. The hotel is located directly across from the Indianapolis International Airport and provides free 24-hour shuttle service and guest parking. It's close to downtown and to the site of the 2007 Formula One United States Grand Prix, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, which makes this hotel an ideal choice for business, pleasure, and for the listeners of this podcast. Call for your reservation today to 1-317-244-6861 or 1-888-HOLIDAY or book online through www.hiselect.com. You know you want to.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, of course, we've got the two interviews, one with Frédéric Vigée and, of course, Frank Montagny. Please, Nasser, introduce these outstanding interviews.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Our first interview today is with Mr. Frédéric Vigée, head of programming and acquisitions at Motors TV. Motors TV is a French-based TV network dedicated to racing where cars are turning left and right. It is available in many countries 24/7 with audio in French, English, and German. And I do watch their YouTube clips quite a bit because they have all sorts of motor races there.
Not available here.
Unfortunately, not yet. And they also signed recently Murray Walker to do commentary for them, so which is good. And on behalf of many road racing fans in the United States, I made a passionate plea to Mr. Vigée for Motors TV to come to America because we sure need a network where they're not showing NASCAR 24/7. So my thanks to Mr. Vigée not only for his time but also for kindly arranging the interview I did with Murray Walker, which is coming up in the next few weeks. That was through his efforts. And my thanks also to Ms. Anne Bernard of Motors TV for making this interview possible. And thank you for your time.
Okay, I'm here with Frédéric Vigée of Motors TV in France. Sir, how are you today? And please tell us a little bit about the history of your network, which is becoming so famous now.
Well, basically, the channel was established in September 2000, so that about 8 years ago, as a pan-European network from the very beginning. We're now available in 36 countries in Europe, plus about 20 countries in Africa, French-speaking Africa. And the channel is available in five different languages, namely French, obviously, because we come from France, English, German, Greek, and Serbian.
Now, what led to the creation of All Motorsports Network? Was racing not very given much time by radio and TV in France? What led to it?
Well, basically, the company was settled on the basis of a production company. Before, we used to work for Canal Plus doing digital F1 with them. We worked for Eurosport a long time. And it came a time by the end of the 1990s when you realized that, well, there were too few motorsports on TV and that it became possible to set your own channel with digital, etc. So we just decided, okay, well, instead of providing programming to Eurosport or other people, which always had to be cut down. I mean, we had a great one-hour race, but you have to cut down to 2 minutes, which is not good. So we said, okay, well, we'll do more motorsports and we'll have our own channel.
Was Patrick Tambay involved in the creation of this also?
Patrick was involved at the very beginning. He's still involved, but he's not involved in the day-to-day business, I would say. But he's still there. He knows the channel a lot. He works with us a lot. But he has to handle his son also now, who is a racing driver, a very good one.
Yeah, I met both of them in Barcelona last year. We interviewed them. You mentioned you do it in several languages. Are all the production facilities and studios based in France, or you have, like there's Motors TV UK, do you have facilities here also?
Yeah, we have facilities here. Basically, we have three different feeds. One is for France, one is for UK only, and the third feed is pan-European. Most of the programming we get is already voiced in English, so that's the easy side. If we do productions in Paris, we get people to come in Paris to do commentary, or we do voice it from the UK from ISDN lines, which is easy. Germany is handled in Germany. We have two studios, one in Berlin and one in, I think, a place called Rötligen. No idea where it is, but we do voicing in German from there. And then Serbian and Greek are handled from both Belgrade and Athens directly.
When can we expect? The reason I want to talk to you is in the United States, the main network is Speed TV, which used to be Speed Vision, and Speed Vision showed a lot of road racing, and the cars are turning right and left, and Speed TV is now just NASCAR Nation. So there is a rallying cry, and there's a big base of American Formula One fans and road racing fans, and we want somebody like you to come there. When can we expect Motors TV USA?
When, I don't know, but it's something we are considering, not only the US, but also other places in the world. The main problem is obviously licensing the rights. I mean, we carry things like the American Le Mans series, which is already shown in the US. We used to carry NASCAR, which is already shown. So we would need to build, a proper new feed, new, let's say, world feed, which we would, to some extent, downgrade, getting rid of some of those series, but this is something we're thinking about. The main thing is, before doing that, we need to make sure we would have distribution in the US, and we would have, well, let's say, the clients. That would mean that we can pay this fee, but this is something we're working on. We just started recently working in Asia, and we got now a 6-hour block of programming going weekly to Asia on a few networks just to establish the brand. So this is probably the way we would do it to start with in the US.
Now, it's a very important question. I watch a lot of your segments on YouTube, okay? Is that okay with you? Because, you know, Formula One is very,
Well, it's okay for me if you watch them, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah, as long as you don't complain and, you know, send a letter to Google don't do it like F1 does. We're very happy. But I thank you for your time, and would you have a message for our listeners, please?
I'm surprised that you came from so far to see people here in Birmingham, and maybe because it's the time, Happy New Year to everybody, and hopefully we'll have a great 2009 in all senses, and especially in motorsports.
Who do you think will be Formula One world champion?
I got no idea, and I won't say anything. But I think Lewis could do it again.
Thank you very much.
Monsieur Vigier, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Nasser, now the bonus interview with Franck Montagny.
Franck Montagny is a man on the move these days. He will take part in Le Mans and Sebring this year with Peugeot. And it was at the Peugeot stand where this interview took place at the Autosport show. And he's also trying to land a drive in IndyCar racing. Nice guy, pretty cool guy, I must say. His career highlights include French karting champion at the age of 14, champion in World Series by Nissan, which is now World Series by Renault, in both 2001 and 2003. In 2003, his teammate was the driver he beat to win the championship, and his name was Heikki Kovalainen. Pretty interesting, huh? Montagny also did some stint as test driver for Renault and Toyota. Last year, he won two races in American Le Mans Series with Michael Andretti's team and placed third at Le Mans in his native country. My thanks to Franck Montagny for his time and to Mr. Peter Brazier for making this and all other interviews possible.
Okay, I'm here at the Autosport Show with Mr. Franck Montagny. Franck, how are you today and what do you like here today?
I'm very good, thank you. what I like here is my first time here in this show, and from what I heard, is one of the best in the world. I think there is one in America. Maybe it's Orlando. I'm not sure. Is this one? And there is this one. So it's quite important. It's quite good, and it's good. It's good spirit.
What is your big agenda for 2009?
Well, I don't know yet. I'm doing Le Mans for sure, and I'm gonna try to go back a little bit to America and maybe do a couple of races over there. And try to do a couple of races here also with Peugeot.
In 2008, last year, you raced in American Le Mans Series with Michael Andretti's team, and you had success. How different is the American racing environment from the European scene? Not just about the drivers, but also the fans.
Well, to say the truth, is last year with Andretti and the car I was running with, I had a fantastic time. I really had really good fun in the car. I enjoyed racing there. I had we won. The spirit of the team was good. Spirit of all the guys around, all the fans, everything are very, very respectful, so it's good. You know, I'm used to Formula One where you parked everybody, you can't access, the fan can't access to the car, or just like 20 meters away. And they're not respectful as much as they are in America. In America, you don't have to put a barrier or whatever. The guys came close to the car, but they don't touch the car. You don't have to put a stickers on it, like, please don't touch it. They're very, very respectful, and it's very, very nice to race there.
Any issues driving for two different makes, Peugeot and Acura?
Last year, that was okay, because I was driving for Peugeot Factory, and I was driving for Michael Andretti's team, which was running an Acura team, so it's a little bit different.
Okay, your thoughts on two very popular American tracks, Laguna Seca in Cali and Road America, Elkhart Lake.
Yeah, Laguna Seca, it's a great place just because it's California, and California is, I really like it. And all the places around are just beautiful, and so it's good to go there, because if you take maybe 2 days off before, 2 days off after, it's like you have a very good time over there. The track by itself, it's very nice, but it's very, very slippery. Due to the sand and the wind, and during the evening it's very cold also, so it's very difficult to get a good car there, because the tire temperature are very, very important, and it's quite hard to get good stuff over there. But well, we had a good race, we won there, so I think it was good. But I think it's the most European track we can see in America, and after you get Road America, which is a lot longer, but it's a kind of old style, old Europe circuit with more bunking and more up and downhill. It was good to race that too. It was good fun. Both of them are really good tracks. I really like them.
Okay. Do you prefer fast racing tracks like Spa or street circuits like Monte Carlo, Long Beach?
I don't know. I like the circuits where I won, so I don't know. Long Beach I didn't win, but I quite like it. Finished second for the first time in Champ Car. It was good. I wish I could go there again this year with the IndyCar. But I really like Spa also with a normal car. The only problem is all the stuff around Spa is not really nice. There's absolutely no hotel, no restaurant, nothing. So it's always traveling a long, very long way from the hotel to the circuit. It's a short sleep every time, so it's not fantastic. But
Sounds like you are friends with Flavio.
No, but I'm quite in a. I know in America it's a little bit different because everybody comes with his motorhome. Uh-huh. In Europe you don't do that, you go to the hotel, you know, every evening. So when you get like 30 minutes, 40 minutes drive to go to the hotel on the evening, on the morning, it's like you need the night to recover. And it's quite important. You need to spend a lot of time with engineers, you stay in the truck, at the track for a long time. So it has to be short traveling and there it's not possible. There's always a lot of traffic, only one street, and it's not easy. But the circuit by itself, fantastic.
You mentioned your second place in the Long Beach Grand Prix. That was a historic race. This was the last ever Champ Car race. How would you compare that Penske car to an F1 machine?
It's different because a Formula One car, if you put it in Long Beach, I think it's going to be a little bit difficult. But obviously a Formula One car is... you're never going to drive the same car twice. Like every time I get in Formula One car, the car has changed a little bit. A little bit of front wing, a little bit of rear wings, the engine, everything inside changed a little bit by a little bit because you got 1,000 people working on your car day and night. So a Champ car is... everybody got the same car, so you can't do it by yourself. You know, you have to go to the factory, ask for some change. Yes, it's a big process, and it's not easy to make some change on the car. So I can just set it up, but it's a powerful car, obviously a little bit less than a Formula One, but I think it's quite comparable in a street circuit because when it's very narrow, it's a good car, but it's more a muscle car than a Formula One car.
Okay. We have a beautiful Peugeot 908 here. How much fun is it going around 200 miles per hour in this car at Mulsanne, especially at night?
It's good. It's really good. I mean, it's a very special feeling. Is when you are in Le Mans, when you are in this car, and especially because it's a closed car, you have no much noise. You are with yourself only. You know, it's like you are very alone inside the car. And it's true that the speed it's amazing. And when it starts to be dark around 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock on the evening, you start to smell the barbecue of everybody, all the fans on the side, and it's just amazing. You're just crossing the forest and you go like 200 miles per hour and you smell the barbecue there. You see the big wheels, you know, far away from you with all the lights. And you're still racing, you know. It's like, it's a special feeling. Le Mans is very unique.
Talking of special feeling, what will it mean to win Le Mans in a French car to you?
Well, come back in Le Mans and I try to win and I'll tell you the answer.
Okay. Well, we wish you all the best and last year was a great race. You were test driver for Renault. Is Flavio easy and fun guy to deal with or is he very tough when it comes to business matters?
Well, he's tough. He's a tough guy. You know, he won many times the world championship. He's a good boss. You know, he makes things happening, so that's good. But when you do that, it's not easy also to work with. You know, it's like it's a tough guy. So when you want to go this way and he wants to go this way, two decisions and only one answer. So it's a little bit difficult sometimes. But I learn a lot with him.
In the old days, because I've been following motor racing for a long time, Elf and Renault were always behind French drivers. Do you think Renault should always have at least one French driver on their F1 team as a driver?
Well, I'm French, so obviously I would say yes, but I don't think it's normal. I don't see any Italian drivers in the Ferrari car. I think in France, you know, it's like all the media and everything, we don't believe in our drivers. We believe in them when they are in Formula One. As soon as when they are in Formula One, the big stars and they're super good and blah, blah, blah. But when they are young in Formula 3 and everything, nobody do anything for them. Like, absolutely nothing happened. You go to England, the guy win the championship, the Formula 3 championship, he got a big cover on the Autosport magazine and all the stuff. So it's very important for the fans to know about who is driving the car and which young guy is coming next. And in France, that's not happening. So I don't think it's a Renault problem.
Now, all these drivers, Depailler, Pironi, Prost, Lafitte, Arnoux, Tombé, were race-winning Formula 1 drivers. Did you have a French racing hero when you were growing up, or who were your racing heroes, if any?
No hero. Absolutely no hero. No. Just my father.
Okay, you know, talking of your father, was there? How did you develop interest in motor racing? Was there interest in the family?
Yeah, I think if my father was crazy about cars, he was a car seller. He was doing some rally, amateur. And when I was 2, 3 years old, 4 years old, I was with him on every rally and coming back with the car, you know, with all the noise and everything. So I think that's what makes me who I am today. You know, it's like he pushed me to do go kart when I was 9 and all those stuff. If he was a football fan, maybe I would be a football player. You never know. You know, it's like when you're a child. Yeah, you're not able to take any decision. You just follow where your parents put you.
Between 2001 and 2003, you won the World Series by Nissan. Names have changed two times and finished second once. What were some of the high points from those years and some of the disappointments from those years?
No disappointments. I had some good times, some worse, but I think that's part of life, you know. It's when you win, everything it's beautiful, everything is fantastic. And when you lose, it's like you feel very, very sad, and it's things that tomorrow never gonna happen, and all those stuff. But that's a way to learn also life and to learn racing. But I really had good times in 2003 with Heikki Kovalainen, Mark Genet, and all those drivers, and when I won the championship, and that was a very good year.
Talking of Heikki Kovalainen, in 2003 you beat him in the championship. Do you think Kovi is quick enough to beat Hamilton?
I don't know. I don't care. not my fight, not my problem.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, this is a very important question. How much did you enjoy owning a barber shop in Barcelona?
That was cool. Yeah, it was a barber shop, but it was also a place we were open until midnight or 1 o'clock on the morning every Thursday. We bring some DJ and we sell some clothes. When we had some friends, we were designing clothes. We were like everything store, you know. But at the beginning, it was a barber. But every friends we had in Barcelona, in Spain, and we were okay. We're doing a new design for T-shirt. Okay, put it in my shop. So it was like for 1 month we had the new design, T-shirt design stuff, and the other month was a photography, and the other one was a paint, and so that was good. That was good. I really enjoyed it.
Flavio is a man of style. Did he ever come to your shop?
No. That's my place. Not this. No racing stuff. Private life. No.
Okay. You know, the racing fans like myself, you know, you read about a racing driver, and like I'm asking you about racing questions. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about you? Frank Montani, the man, you know, what kind of music you like, what kind of, some personal stuff, not too personal, but what you like your listeners to, our listeners to know about you?
Well, I'm quite simple. Like to be with family, but I'm never with family because I have no time, traveling a lot. Love everything with an engine, motorcycle, jet ski. I'm doing a lot of those. I'm a jet ski teacher. We have a jet ski place in the south of France with my father. So renting, doing some randonnée and all the stuff, so that's good. We go to the desert during winter, just to go 1 week away from telephones and fax and emails and everything, just with a bag and with the quads and the motorbikes and with the GPS, and we go. I like every kind of music. I'm really into music, but I like hip-hop, rock and roll for most of it. And it really depends on my mood. I'm going to listen a couple of songs and tracks which I really like, and really I decide and at certain times.
Do you like music by Pussycat Dolls?
Not really, no. I like the girls. I mean, they're beautiful, but not really my stuff.
Okay, and where is your dad's business in south of France? What town?
We're doing that in Hyères, very close to Toulon. And we got a restaurant and a jet ski base. So it's just in front of the island. And so we can go into the island, make all the lap around the islands and all the stuff. So that's really cool.
So if I go to your dad's restaurant and I tell him I know Frank, am I getting a discount?
If you speak French, yes.
Oh, man. I'll take Patrick Tambay with me. What is the name of the restaurant?
It's Paddock.
Wow.
Yeah, it's easy.
That's very easy. Okay, finally, how about a message for listeners of F1 Weekly, please?
Well, I think race, for me, race is the most important in life. But you can't do those kind of stuff without any fans, without any people around it. If if you race on your on our own, alone on the circuit with my car, there's no more race, there's no more sponsors, there's no more fans, there's no more, it's not anymore professional stuff. So I think I know life has changed a lot, and cars and fuel and all the stuff change a lot, but I think we have to support our sport and for a long time, because it's a beautiful one. So
thank you very much. Merci muchachas.
Falk Montagny, thank you for joining F1Weekly.com. And now let's go right into the wrap-up. Steve's got the forum updates.
This week's forum updates. Tricky Dicky is back from holiday, and as a treat, is providing this week's forum updates. This week saw the celebration of Jackson's 30th birthday. Happy birthday! Ye's taste in household items has been brought into question. Check out the Baked Bean United thread to view pictures of his hideous table mats and dated dinner plates. We're not covering racing on the forum.
Well, no, but
anymore.
the coaster the drink was on, it's questionable.
Okay. Snow is a big topic of discussion on the forum. UK members decided to have a panic attack over just a few inches of snow. Check out the countryside topic for these images. Focused discussions have taken place on the beauty of Jensen Button's girlfriend. Images, of course, included in the relevant topic.
Yeah, I'm happy Jensen has a new ride.
Widget 1972 has started a motion in support of Sato getting an F1 drive. Support from the forum seems to be muted at this stage. A new Batracer game has started with Mike Ellery taking the first victory. Clearly, the opportunities to join Batracer games are now ended, but check out the forum for various other online games still in the registration stages. The F1 Weekly Forum newsletter has officially ceased circulation due to time constraints. There are currently active discussions taking place between Tricky Dicky and other members to see if the responsibility can be passed on, fingers crossed. Finally, a message of good hope for one of our newer board members. FishGuy876 has shown outstanding dedication with a substantial 7 posts, with a staggering 0.01% of all the 4 posts to his name. FishGuy876 has shown that even through tough economic times, the forum is still a worthwhile place to be. Fight the credit crunch, join the forum. That's all for this week.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and of course we thank Tricky Dick. And now to the wrap-up, Motorsports Memories 2009, powered by Turbo Calendar, is almost gone, but we have a few copies left, $15.95 plus shipping and handling. Just go to the merchandise page or email mass@f1weekly.com. Marin Karting is proud to organize and support the 2009 Jim Russell Northern California Rotax Series. Marin Karting offers CRG carts, engines, and parts for all carts, engine service, driver coaching, and trackside support to Northern California carters. For more information, contact Marin Karting at 415-898-0999 or at marincarting.com. We want to mention our MySpace and Facebook sites. Just do a search for F1 Weekly and add us as a friend. If you'd like to advertise or cross-promote with our website or podcast, email us at info@f1weekly.com. I want to thank everybody who makes the show possible. That would be the listeners. And of course, Nasser Hamid, Steve Faub, David Tapia, the executive producer, and Toby Dawes, the outstanding webmaster that he knows he is. And of course, good night to Desiree, wherever you are.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, recording and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.